Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Eric Klein, attorney registration number 42185, and I represent Mr. Veit in this criminal appeal. I want to start by apologizing for my open jacket. I just lost a button during the recess, so I mean...
Well, that's okay. I can't get this thing to clasp either, so...
then we're even. The primary issue here is whether a court can persist in an order of probation when a defendant does not and has not consented. And our Supreme Court could not have been clearer when it said in People v. Smith, an offender also must choose to accept the court's terms. The court may not impose a sentence of probation without the offender's consent. Here, the district court sentenced Mr. Veit to 10 years in prison and also sentenced him to an additional 25 years of probation with very strict and onerous conditions. The court never asked Mr. Veit if he was willing to accept these conditions, and Mr. Veit never voiced his assent. Mr. Veit then made clear through his 35A motion that he did not consent. The trial court refused to let Mr. Veit decline his probation because it reasoned, as the state does now, that once Mr. Veit asked for probation in any form, he was stuck with it in whatever form the court might impose, and even if it followed a 10-year prison sentence. This was not the probation that Mr. Veit had requested, and this was not a probation to which he consented. In multiple cases, made clear that a probationary sentence is invalid unless the defendant consents to the terms or conditions as imposed. And these cases came from this court in Martinez, in Rollins, it came from the Colorado Supreme Court in Smith, and it's very telling that in its answer, the state did not address these cases.
Mr. Klein, is your client objecting to any probation or to probation, certain of the terms and conditions of the probation?
I think that if he was just objecting to the terms, certain terms and conditions, we probably would not be able to raise that in this court. I think that's what the statute says, that we can't come to this court complaining about terms and conditions unless our complaint is that they were not authorized by law. Our complaint is that if this is the probation that the district court would impose, Mr. Veit would simply say thank you, but no thank you, and I will take my chances with whatever prison sentence the court would impose. So I think at this stage, it is an objection to the imposition of probation in the form that it is, and I don't think that the district court would probably say, okay, well, let's horse trade here, and I don't think that's the role of this court to get into that horse trading.
Pardon me, Mr. Klein, but prosecution argues that basically it's in for a penny, in for a pound. That when your client said, yeah, I want probation, that he opened himself up to this potential sentence. Understanding, of course, that he didn't say, sentence me to prison and give me probation. He said, I want probation. Why doesn't that argument at least have some force?
Yeah, because that's simply not consent. That's not consent to the terms and conditions that the court imposed. And that's, I think, just what the rule of law stated in Smith makes incredibly clear. The defender must choose to accept the court's terms, and the court may not impose a sentence of probation without the offender's consent. This is Mr. Veit's requested terms, were not the court's terms, obviously. And Mr. Veit never chose to accept the court's terms. And it's not an in for a penny and in for a pound scenario. That's not consent. And I don't think that in a contract situation, this court would ever say, if somebody offers certain terms and somebody else comes back with other terms, that the person who offered the contract in the first instance is bound thereby.
If we were to agree with you and send this back, would the trial court be able to sentence your client to prison consecutively on the count that it imposed probation on?
Bound by the terms of the plea agreement, yes. So he could face up to 12 years in prison. And I think that's the deal that he struck, and that's the deal he would have to live with. And so if we went back, and if we'd gone back when the 35A was filed, the court said, fine, here's the rest of your term, 12 years in prison, Mr. Veit would have to live with that. That's the deal he struck, and that's what he requested. Probation instead of prison, and if the court said, I don't think you're a good candidate for probation, I'm going to sentence you to prison, he would have to live with that.
Thank you.
And I think that something that clearly shows the lack of consent here is that there is a form in the record, the conditions of probation, which is at page 604 of the electronic court file, which does have a place for a defendant to accept the conditions of probation. This is something that was not signed by Mr. Bike, was not discussed with Mr. Bike. The conditions actually laid out on the page in the record that precedes that form by a page, I think it's at 602, so by two pages. Those conditions were never discussed with Mr. Bike at sentencing. And so there really wasn't ever even an opportunity for him to consent. Now, before I be hoisted on my own petard, in Mr. Bite's sentencing memorandum, he did request probation and say, I am willing to accept these onerous financial crimes conditions, and it has an attachment, those conditions. Those conditions that Mr. Bite submitted actually are different than the ones that were imposed. A lot of them are the same. There is one condition that's added to the form, to the conditions that were imposed by the district court, and then there's a slight modification to another condition. But the condition that's added is a big one and a broad one, and it is that Mr. Bite shall have no internet access, shall not through any internet access provider. It's condition number 21, and it's very broadly worded. And that's in 2014, or when Mr. Bite should get out of prison in several years, that is obviously a very onerous condition, and that is one that he should have been informed of and should have had the right to say, you know what, if I'm getting 10 years in prison, rather than for 25 years have to check with the probation officer anytime I want to check my email, I think I'll just take the rest of the prison time. That was never put to him. He never consented to that. And in the absence of his consent to the conditions, to the probation that the district court imposed, it's an invalid sentence.
Counsel, what are we to understand was his thought about what probation would consist of when he was requesting probation? I mean, he had to have some understanding, either explained through his counsel or through, I don't know how, but why would he ask for probation if without some understanding of what that would entail?
I think that his sentencing memorandum makes clear there was an understanding of what probation may entail. And as I discussed, the probation as imposed was not that. There was an added very large condition. But what Mr. Bite, I think his position at sentencing was, as made clear through his sentencing memorandum through counsel, was I'll take whatever kind of probation you want to impose on me. I will have the most onerous, strictest probation officer looking at everything I do if you don't send me to prison. That's what, so I think that, again, if we were here arguing about the actual, any individual condition, it would be a much different scenario. But what Mr. Bite said, I'll basically do whatever you want, just don't send me to prison. But when the district court said, well, I'm going to send you to prison for 10 years, and I'm going to impose not only the probation you contemplated in your sentencing memorandum, but something even more onerous, that's not what Mr. Bite signed on for, and that's not what he ever assented to or consented to.
Mr. Klein, you also referenced the court's asserted noncompliance with a statute that requires an application for probation to be in writing on a form provided by the court. Assuming that the court had granted your client probation only as requested without incarceration, would it still have been illegal because it was not on a form provided by the court?
Well, Your Honor, I've actually thought about this quite a lot, and I think that that conditions of probation form, which is at page, I guess it's 604 of the record, that would fulfill that statutory requirement. And because it is required to be signed by the defendant accepting probation, I think that would fulfill both the consent and would fulfill the requirements of a written form provided by the court. It's very clear that is a stock form that's been prepared by the court and then is filled out to meet the specifics of the case. In this case, it's interesting because the specifics are somewhat inaccurate, but as far as what count it is and so forth and whether and when probation starts.
So there's not a separate form somewhere floating around that just has to be filled out before this whole process starts. What you're saying is the thing at the very end that lists all the conditions is the form contemplated under that statute.
I think the statute seems to contemplate something in advance. I think that if the court had sentenced Mr. Bite to probation and had this form, I would have a very difficult argument to Your Honor saying this was not, this does not meet the statutory requirement.
Thank you.
I have 5 minutes remaining. If the court does not have any other further questions at this point, I will go ahead and reserve the rest of my time.
Certainly.
May it please the court, my name is Jillian Price, registration number 40815, and I represent the people. This case is about consent. And the fact that Mr. Veit apparently now has a case of buyer's remorse does not negate the consent and his acquiescence in the probation sentence that was imposed. Before probation, in his sentencing memorandum, Mr. Veit clearly requested probation, and certainly he did request probation in lieu of prison. At sentencing, after the trial court specifically said, I'm going to impose probation, after the trial court said, I'm going to impose prison, I'm also going to impose probation, I'm going to impose probation for 25 years, I'm going to impose probation because I want to make sure that the public remains safe from you. After all of those things occurred at the sentencing hearing, the trial court asked, is there anything further on behalf of Mr. Veit? Both of his defense attorneys who were present at the sentencing hearing, well, neither of them made any objection, raised any concerns, or said anything to challenge what the trial court imposed for the probationary sentence. Counsel said, please release the bond. Counsel said, can we consider transferring probation to Iowa so that Mr. Veit can work on his family's farm? No objections to any of these terms or conditions. At that point in time, at the very least, that is implicit consent to and acquiescence in the probation sentence. Therefore, that sentence was properly imposed. And when a trial court properly imposes a probationary sentence that is indeed consistent with the statutory scheme, it is not subject to appellate review. And therefore, the people contend that this court should not address this claim. But even if it does, the record shows that Mr. Veit solicited probation and acquiesced in that sentence. And therefore, under the standards of Rule 35A, this sentence was properly imposed and was authorized by law, and the trial court properly dismissed, or rather denied, the Rule 35A motion. Regarding the idea that...
Pardon me for interrupting, Mr. Rice. I'm sorry. But I'm assuming, based upon your argument now, is that you're saying that this sentence was not illegal. And therefore, the reason that the 35A was denied is that this isn't an illegal sentence. It was properly entered.
That's absolutely correct.
Is the defendant making a 35C argument here as opposed to a 35A argument?
I don't know that that was clear from his motion. To the extent that he is arguing ineffective assistance, I don't know that that's clear from the motion as filed. The motion as filed, as I read it, says, very clearly argues that this sentence, according to him, was illegal because he did not consent to the terms as imposed. I don't read that as an ineffective assistance claim. I suppose were the 3-year limit still open, that would be something that he might pursue. But I don't know that that's before the court in this particular appeal, nor was that filed in the motion below.
I'm wondering more if it is an attack on the manner in which the sentence was imposed.
I suppose I don't read his motion that way either. As Mr. Klein argued just now, the specific thing that he appears to take issue with is that his client, is that Mr. Veit did not consent to probation as imposed. And therefore he argues that it was illegal. If it's a question of the manner in which it was imposed, that too was correct. The trial court, as this court knows, has wide discretion in making its sentencing decisions. And under the probation statutes, 18.1.3, 202, and 204, a trial court is specifically given the mandate to impose probation in a manner that is both rehabilitative for the defendant and also for the purposes of protecting the public. The trial court articulated its reasoning for imposing probation at the sentencing hearing. Specifically, I want to make sure that by the time this probation sentence is over, you are beyond the point at which you'll be tempted to perpetrate these securities fraud crimes again. So in that respect, the trial court did, the manner in which the sentence was imposed was indeed correct. And even if the defendant has in fact made a 35C claim in that regard, it would still fail.
Thank you.
Now, to the extent that Mr. Veit is arguing that he could withdraw his consent to probation now at this stage, there is similarly nothing in the record that would support that argument either. Again, there's nothing at the sentencing hearing or indeed any place else in the record that would indicate that his consent, that his request for probation and his later acquiescence in that sentence was in any way coerced or obtained through improper methods.
Didn't he say in his 35A motion that he had not consented to the terms of his probation, and had he known them, he would not have consented and would have declined probation? Could he say that in a 35A motion?
He said that in his 35A motion.
But you're saying he couldn't.
But I apologize.
Certainly, go ahead.
What he's saying now in his 35A motion does not invalidate the acquiescence and consent to his sentence, which again was very clearly articulated at the sentencing hearing. Over a course of several pages in the transcript, the trial court made very clear why it was imposing the sentence that it imposed, the reasoning for that sentence, and gave Mr. Veit the specific opportunity to challenge that condition and that sentence as a whole. And he failed to do so. And again, I characterize this as a case of buyer's remorse in as much as he had the opportunity, failed to do so, and is now arguing, well, I should have said this at the sentencing hearing, but did not. For the reasons stated both here and in the people's brief, the trial court properly imposed probation consistent with the statutory scheme. And first of all, the people argue that this court should therefore not review this probationary claim because it was properly imposed. And secondly, even if this court does review this claim, it fails under the standards of 35A or indeed 35C because the trial court properly imposed the sentence pursuant to statute, and the manner in which it imposed it, in which it imposed the sentence, was also consistent with statute. Unless this court has any further questions on this or any of the other issues raised, the people will stand on their briefs and request that this court affirm the trial court's ruling.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you.
Mr. Klein, you've got 3 seconds south of 5 minutes. I mean, all but 3 seconds south of 5 minutes. I apologize.
Thank you, Your Honor. This is not a case of buyer's remorse. If I go to the car dealership and buy a Toyota pickup and a Dodge Neon delivered to my house, that's not the deal that I made. That's not the car that I requested. That's not buyer's remorse. That's saying I never agreed to this transaction. Here, what Mr. Veit requested, and a defendant does not get to dictate his sentence, but he does get to decline probation. Because probation is a privilege. It's not something that can be imposed over his objection. Here, the trial court, I think, is very important that the conditions that were imposed, so let me back up. It's very important, A, this is not what Mr. Veit requested. B, the conditions that were imposed were never actually discussed with Mr. Veit. The trial court made a generic reference to I think economic crimes or financial crimes supervision, but never said, let me go through the 26 specific conditions that entails, and let me make sure that you're going to be able to comply with these and be willing to comply with these, and that you wouldn't just say, well, rather than do that, I'll just take the rest of the prison term. That was never discussed with Mr. Veit, never discussed with his counsel. That was never on the table so that Mr. Veit could make an informed consent. That's what is required, is consent to those terms and acceptance of those terms, and those terms were never even discussed.
Pardon me for interrupting, Mr. Klein, but while you still have some time, how do you address Ms. Price's argument that, well, he had an opportunity at the end of the sentencing hearing to say, hold on, that's not what I want. I don't want both prison and probation. This is not for me. This is not my desire. We need to do something else. None of that happened. It wasn't until the 35A is filed that the court's put on notice that he's got this position. Why doesn't that suggest consent?
I think two things, Your Honor. I think, one, the actual conditions of probation were not discussed with Mr. Veit. So at that point, he's not in a position to consent to anytime I want to go on the internet. If I want to get internet connection, anything like that, I have to actually get approval.
What if that were to go away, though? Those conditions, that internet condition, what if that went away?
Well, I think that we're still in a position of consent is not something that is should be inferred easily from silence. The court, I think the transcript reads, the court stated this as a fait accompli. There was no position for Mr. Veit at that point to say, hold on, I don't want to do this. This was what the court said, this is going to be my sentence, this is why, I want somebody watching you closely until you're well into your 60s. And that's what I'm going to do. And I don't think there was a place for Mr. Veit to speak up and say, this isn't what I want. And I think that trial counsel asking to change the probation to say, let it go to Iowa, is not in any way Mr. Veit stating his consent and his acceptance of those terms.
If we look at the record as a whole, and we have his request for probation, understanding it was probation instead of prison at the beginning, and then this first, any lack of objection after the sentence is imposed, and the additional request, I'd like to have my client serve that in Iowa. I mean, if we look at that as a whole, isn't that some suggestion of consent there?
I think, Your Honor, it's not sufficient suggestion of consent. In Smith, the Supreme Court said that an offender must choose to accept the court's terms. And acceptance of terms is very different than silence in the face of a serious sentence that's been imposed, as well as the court calling Mr. Veit a con man. This was not an easy sentencing proceeding. I think if this were contract law we were talking about here, the court would not say this is sufficient to infer consent or assent by silence. Consent or acceptance, even more so, and I think in Smith, the Supreme Court, it would appear purposefully, has a sentence joined by semicolon in which it talks about in the first clause of the sentence that the offender must choose to accept the court's terms, and in the second clause says the court may not impose a sentence of probation without the offender's consent. And so there's acceptance and consent going on here, an acceptance of the specific terms. And I think that's something that should not be inferred lightly from silence. This is something where what was imposed on Mr. Veit was very, very different than what he had requested, and there was something that the court did not ask him to accept. And it would have been easy to do. It may have made the sentencing hearing go a little bit longer, but it would have been easy to do. I would have Mr. Veit sit there and go over the form with counsel and then sign it at that time, or simply say during the sentencing hearing, here are the conditions, here are the terms, Mr. Veit, do you accept that? And then there would be no question. Then there would have been consent on the record, there would have been acceptance, something affirmative to show there was no question there. He understood and he agreed.
Pardon me for interrupting, counsel, but you're over your time.
I am. Thank you. I ask that the court vacate the sentence on count 27 and remand for resentencing.
Thank you very much. Counsel, thank you very much for your arguments today. We appreciate them and your briefs very much. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.